Okay, so welcome to Bio331 Animal Behavior. I'm Ted Pavlik, faculty here in Souls, with an appointment in engineering as well. So today I want to go over the basic course structure, what the course is about, what you'll be expected to do, and so on. And we'll get into a little bit of animal behavior today, but most of that'll be saved for next week. So most of the details in this lecture, definitely check out the syllabus on Canvas. Canvas is going to be a great resource for this course. Canvas, there's a lot of information on there. It's primarily organized into the modules section. So I do allow you to go to this assignments, but all of the assignments I think also show up interdigitated inside the units inside the modules here. So I'm going to step through kind of what to expect on Canvas here, but the kind of like the heuristic to use is if you're looking for it, it's probably under modules. But because of that, modules is kind of dense. So I would, when you go into Canvas, first thing I'd recommend doing is hit that collapse all to collapse all of those things down together to make it a little bit more manageable. And the way those sections are structured is that we've got kind of up at the top, sort of general course information stuff, and then all the unit level stuff kind of down at the bottom. And then as we open those up, as I'll show you, is where you can find assignment information and so on. For those interested in things like honors contracts, if you go into the course information there, we have the whole page on honors contracts. So if that is something you're interested in for this course, take a look at that page first. Read through it, get some ideas there, and then send me a note afterwards as discussed here. So start there and then talk to me after you've read through that. Otherwise, the textbook for this course, if you want a paper textbook, it is available, this Breed book. But I've also it picked a textbook that is available for free at the library electronically. To get quick access to it is to try hitting this ASU Library Resource Organizer on the side, and it should bring you to that link. Otherwise, if you just search for this Breed book in the library, you should be able to find the electronic access there. The textbook, I built the lectures to follow along with roughly the structure of the textbook, and I will use some resources from it, but it's largely meant to be a complement or an auxiliary resource, a way to find a different way of saying things. So if, we'll go over the same topics, but if you need sort of a different spin on it, then the textbook provides a good resource for that. I think it's a good book. It's kind of high level. It has a lot of nice examples. But is it, I if you're willing to occasionally take a look at the electronic version, it's not something that I think will be strictly required for, weekly activity. But it's good to be able to access it, but not necessarily do you need to have a copy, on your bookshelf for the whole semester. Otherwise, I try to, whenever technology allows, to record the lectures and archive them, and those are stored in this classroom recordings module. So if you need that, then that's always available there. As I mentioned, if you go down to the units, then each unit is structured so that we've got, oh, sorry, I meant to jump ahead. There is a project at the end of this, at the end of the semester, that will potentially use a little bit more of that textbook. Potentially, it's motivated by a chapter in the textbook that we don't get to the content from. So, at the end of the semester, as I'll talk about a little bit more here in a bit, but there will be a group project where you're going to pitch a behavior-related study that involves a conservation application with some local Phoenix-related fauna. So it's it this is motivated by there's a chapter at the end of the Breed book, which is all about the overlap between animal behavior and conservation that we don't get a chance to talk about directly, but we talk about a lot of the foundational things that it works with. And so this is an opportunity to explore that chapter as part of this group project. So information about the group project can be found in here. And so you can check out that now, but you really don't have to worry about that until after the midterm, as we'll get to here in a little bit. it, but just know that there is information up there. And then finally, below that, you break down every unit, and every unit has a structure that's somewhat like this one. This unit zero is a little bit special because this one you need to complete these syllabus exercises here at the end in order to unlock the rest of these units. But generally speaking, at the top of a unit, I try to put study guides. I try to put, things you should know. I'll put the lectures linked into them, and then I'll have the assignments. And if there's any practice assignments or anything along those lines, I'll also have those kind of at the bottom here. But the first unit that you should check out is this unit zero, which just is basically the syllabus quiz, and that will unlock the rest of these units. And then, like I said, those units are going to look more like this. And so I've always got a study guide, a list of the key terms that we've talked about that unit. There might be additional study materials that are going to vary. So some units may have these, some units may not. The lectures for the unit, any link to the chapters that this unit was related to. Again, those aren't required, but those are meant to be helpful auxiliary reading to help with that. And then the assignments. And so these assignments, I'll talk about the different groups of them, but there's our Canvas-based assignments here, like this UCEB. So that's Unit Comprehension Exercise B for Unit B. And so the way these work is they close at a particular time. And then once they close, this practice exercise becomes available, which is a copy of that one, but it's ungraded. And as we'll talk about here in just a second, I do that because I put a very generous drop policy on these Canvas exercises. And so a lot of times we'll have students that will take advantage of that drop policy, and that's great. But then when they're going back to study for like the midterm or the final exam, they'll say, "Oh, hey, can I never took that one. Can I go back and use that for practice?" And so this allows even students who didn't take it the first time around to take it the second time around for studying. So that's the reason why things are structured that way. And we'll get into that again here in a second. And then there are two exams, which are going to be Canvas administered exams. So they have these two sections here, the midterm and the final exam. And so those modules, I think, are found. The midterm is kind of right in the middle, and the final exam is right at the end. This is a two-stage exam, so I'll describe what that means here in a little bit. But the first stage of both the midterm and the final exam are going to be using lockdown browsers. So that's why we've got this additional, you get like 0.25% of your exam to do this lockdown browser compliance test to make sure that you've got a device that it works fine on. And so you go through that, and then that will unlock the midterm and the final exam modules. Again, you won't have to worry about those for many weeks. But we'll talk about that here in just a second. So that's the general structure of how things are organized on Canvas. A lot of information there. But I hope that once you get used to that structure, then it'll just be easy to find information when you need it and hide it away when you don't. Okay, I know there might be questions about that, but let's get through some of the other policy stuff, and then I'll be happy to answer those because you might already have the answers in here. So as you know, this course, 2 weekly, 75-minute lectures in here. And that's a little warm right now. Hopefully it'll cool down as it gets a little bit deeper into the semester. Canvas webpage for other information about instructional staff. And so there's two TAs, so Anushka Dasgupta and Sean, is it Mahoney or Mahoney?
Mahoney.
Mahoney, okay. So Anushka and Sean so are both here. So they are the two TAs that are going to make office hours available. So if you need extra help, you want to hear, you have a question about the course content and you want to hear it through someone else or work through someone else, then they'll be here available. They'll also be helping with some other things during the semester. They're the kind of the ones that the main ones to go to first when you've got questions about the course content. Their information is, if you go onto Canvas, there is an instructional staff information link right on the main page and also under the course information module, and their info is in there. So they'll have them contact info also in there, and they'll be populating their office hour availability or student support availability soon, if not already. So take a look at that. They are both students in our social insect research group. So I don't know, Sean or Anushka, if you'd like to introduce yourself, say a little bit about what you do as grad students here. Because they're both sort of studying behavior. One's kind of more neurobiology, and the other one's more traditional behavior. Thanks, Sean. That was great. Anushka? So that's them. And so they are well immersed in this sort of the types of things that we'll talk about here. So definitely great experts for your questions. If you'd like to send us an email, particularly me, I'm in my 40s, so I love email. There's other options as well. But if you do send me an email, I do have another large course that I teach, as well as some graduate courses and researchy stuff and whatever. And emails can get buried, but if you put Bio331 in the subject somewhere, then it'll get flagged for me and it'll be it prioritized so that I'll see it. So it'd be great if, have some concise description of what you need so I know how urgent it is, but definitely put Bio331 in the subject so I make sure that I see it. But feel free to reach out other ways as well. So there is a Slack workspace for this course. So feel free to reach out with DMs on Slack. And so on, or Canvas messaging that works pretty well as well. So those are different modalities, but you do email again, it really is helpful, seriously, to put that in the prefix. Otherwise, so what types of things are we going to cover? So we're going to get into all of that stuff I hinted at here, like stage one and stage two exams and all of that sort of stuff. We'll talk about that, but let's motivate the subject here first. So I'm going to show you a video here. This is a behavior known as stodding. A lot of ungulates do stodding behavior. So a quadruped will be running away from a predator often, and they can run at very high speeds. But instead of running at their top speed, they start leaping into the air, pointing all four of their legs down, and oftentimes in some species, arching their backs like this. And so they'll do this as adults as they're running away. And can look like this, can look a little bit more like this. So this is, I think, maybe a mule deer. I think this is a pronghorn or something like that. But say this is across a wide range of ungulates that are prey animals. So I guess I'm curious. So just when looking at this, what do you guys think? Or what do you think might be going on here? What are some of the explanations or thoughts that you have when you see this behavior? Yeah. Okay, so that is so the idea there is that maybe that if you are not in a full retreat, it could save energy. So that's kind of a biomechanic explanation for where this could possibly be going on. Any other ideas? Okay, so you think that it would just makes it difficult for, if a predator got close, it would be difficult for them to grab? A visual deterrent. So you're saying that it shows off their hooves. Is that so? A signal to the predator, signaling the potential damage could get done from these hooves. Yep. So it could be a signal to the other deer. So there's two deer here. This one doesn't seem to be that bothered. This one's jumping around. So maybe if this one's jumping around, it will alert this one that there is a danger nearby. Other thoughts? Okay, so another sort of functional perspective is that if you jump up high, then maybe you'll know where to run. So if you're like maybe in this, maybe here in this clearing, it's kind of a bad example, but in the normal areas that they're in, if they have to maybe jump up to sort of navigate, and then jump down, run away, and then jump, and so on.
Also being
And why not would why would a healthy why would it not be worth it to try to catch a healthy one? Okay, so this sort of there was a this is similar to the signaling of the predator here. So there was a suggestion over here that signaling, you might be signaling that you are a dangerous prey, but here you're signaling that there's just no way you're going to catch me. So I am that good that I can just go and do this jumping around. Any other thoughts? These are all great. Now, a lot of times I will show you a video like this, and I don't know the right answer, or there is no well supported answer, or the answer that is supported in one species has not been shown in another. This particular case does have some support, but the point here, which we'll get into, I won't leave you hanging too long, too much longer. But the point here is that that type of questioning, that's what we should be doing all semester. That is exactly the type of thing that this class is supposed to cultivate, is this idea that when you look at a behavior like this, you come up with possible explanations, and we call those hypotheses. And so those hypotheses, we're going to find that we group them into these different groups. And so I kind of colored these with four basic colors, and we find that there are basically four different hypotheses. And this doesn't just apply to animal behavior. This applies all across biology. And you could argue that it goes across other explanatory fields as well. You can ask or make explanations about how it works. So somebody might be really impressed at how high the deer is jumping. And so they are going to be much more interested in the muscles, in how the leg is put together, in the weight of the just how is it possible to get a large animal up that far? So how it works, mechanistic hypotheses. There are questions on how it's built. So you say, well, the multicellular organism starts off as a single cell and has to develop into this thing. What is the developmental process? Or does it learn, for example, do things happen to have to happen in its developmental history in order for it to start behaving this way? So understanding that developmental trajectory, developmental hypotheses, how it's built. There are questions on how it evolved. I mentioned that a bunch of ungulates do this. Some do it a little differently than others. Was there just one animal in the very long ago history that developed this, and that we are now seeing echoes of it across all of these other now these other species that are independent species, or has this evolved separately many times? What were the conditions during its evolution that might have explained why it looks this way here and that way there? These sort of relationship questions over very long time periods, how it evolved. So sometimes we call these ontogenetic hypotheses, and we call these phylogenetic hypotheses. And these are things that we're going to go into in more detail next week. But then finally, functional, why it evolved. So there's all these questions of like, well, it provides this function. Predators, it provides the ability to better evade predators for this particular way. It makes them faster. It does all of the, it's all of these questions that are less about what's going on inside the leg, but more about why did animals that do stotting, why did they have better or more reproductive success than animals that didn't do this stotting? So It's my claim that every explanation you can come up with fills into one of these four boxes. And they can be, you can, I mean, they don't compete with each other across these boxes. You can have a function that has a completely different mechanism than another thing that has that same function. So next week, we'll start talking about the vertebrate eye, and we'll be comparing it to the cephalopod eye. Those are provide very, very similar functions, and actually some of the mechanisms are very similar, but they're completely different eyes. And behind the scenes, at the level of the retina, totally different things are going on. So you can have very different mechanisms for the same function. You can also have the same mechanism in a different environment, providing a different function. So these things don't have to map to each other. So that's something else that we're going to be talking about a lot in this class, is the relationship of the environment and how it helps determine function as well. But claim is, any explanation you can come up with goes into these boxes. Now, once you have a bunch of competing explanations inside a box, then we can start saying, well, which one is more likely to be true for this particular organism that we're looking at? So I have like three hypotheses for why it evolved. Well, what we're going to talk about in this class is, how do we disentangle those hypotheses? How do we build an experiment where, with the one experiment, so the experiment might be, we're going to go out and scare a bunch of mule deer, and we're going to scare them in certain types of ways that, under different hypotheses, lead to different predictions. So under a hypothesis that they're signaling how dangerous they are, we might get one prediction. Under a hypothesis that they're signaling how fast they are, we might get a different prediction. Under a hypothesis that they're signaling to the other species that there is a predator nearby, we might have a different prediction. So we run the one experiment, we get three different predictions for three different hypotheses, and then we evaluate how well the predictions line up with what we actually saw out of the experiment. And we might see that, whereas a second hypothesis here, it completely is different than the predictions that we saw, these two, this one really lined up very well with the predictions. The output from that experiment matched exactly what we had here. This one, I couldn't really tell. It was like I couldn't reject the hypothesis, but I'd also, it seemed like it still was in the plausible range of that hypothesis. And so that doesn't mean that this one won, that this top prediction won. It can be the case that actually, even within this category, there can be some bit of one and some bit of another. It can be possible that you signal your health as well as how dangerous you are. It can be possible that you signal your health to a predator as well as signal the presence of a predator to other prey. These things can coexist. And our question in science really is to say, to what extent does one explanation explain a phenomenon over another? So we sort of say, well, 75% of the variance that we see in this behavior is explained by the presence of X, or is explained by this explanation Y, and so on and so forth. So those are the types of things that we will put, more rigorous back into in this class. So for this particular example, starting, one of the dominating hypotheses, but it is not the thing, there could be the other things going on simultaneously. But one of the ones that's dominating right now that has stood up to the experiments we've done is the so-called handicap principle, which is a lot like this explanation about signaling health. It seems to be, based on the experiments that have been done, that when animals do this type of display, that they could have gotten away very efficiently by just running in a sort of a normal run. But this here appears to be a deterrent to predators, that when they see it, they immediately turn around and they go after a prey that's not doing it. Because it seems to be that predators that have attempted, so there's an interesting mix, kind of a coevolution going on here. Predators that chase after starting prey often don't get a meal. And healthy prey that can start often then survive. Those two things together created this coupling where you have predators that have evolved the trait of being aversive to starting. They see starting and they go and do something else and pray that are healthy and able to start, then do their best. Instead of running fast, they do the starting. And these two in the same area together end up leading to the persistence of starting. Now, that doesn't mean that the prey strategized about starting. That doesn't mean that there was like a convention where the prey and the predators got together and they agreed that, that this is what starting means. All this means is that prey that happened to be so healthy that they ran a particular, this is me hypothesizing on how this evolved. But if, if really fast prey in the past might have happened to have a little bit more bounce in their step. And the ones that had a little bit more bounce in their step happened to be the ones that predators started to veer away from because they realized they're so fast and they're so bouncy. I should just go for the weaker ones, kind of like this explanation came up here. That over time leads to what we're going to talk about in a couple of weeks, ritualization. So a little bounce that just comes from you being fast. You start realizing, not realizing, but your genes start being selected so that in future generations, you get a ritualistic bounce, a bounce that has nothing to do with you leaping into the air because you're fast, a bounce because those that bounced tended to not be eaten. And then a little bounce turns into a bigger bounce, turns into a bigger bounce, and then you have starting. That's a thought. That is a hypothesis for how you get this sort of stuff. But that's the leading example or the leading explanation right now for why we have starting in all of these prey animals. It signals their health. It's the so-called handicap principle. You could not have this costly handicap if there wasn't a lot of other stuff going on for you. And we're going to see that handicap principle come up in a lot of other animal behavior examples down later in the semester. Any questions about that, this general idea? Again, we're going to learn about the handicap principle later in the semester. This is my example of the types of stuff that, motivating what you're going to learn here in this class. Okay. So zooming out, what are we going to do in this class, basically? I'm not going to read through all of this, but basically, I'm going to show you a wide range of natural history examples, vertebrates, invertebrates. Just a bunch of examples in from the animal kingdom that display different types of behavior, and we're going to pick them apart to try to understand what's going on with that behavior along these four dimensions that I was just talking about there. So, wide range of natural history examples and show how we design experiments to disentangle hypotheses and then critically evaluate, tools for critically evaluating the data that come out of those. So, what will you get out of that? So, again, I'm not going to read through all this, but these are the learning outcomes here. So, we're talking about everything from solitary down to social. But the big thing, and you can read all these on Canvas, but the big thing that I want to drive home here is that although this course is primarily, like it's at least proximally about animal behavior, really, this the tools that you get out of this course can apply across biology and beyond. So I'm trying to use your, hopefully, your intrinsic motivation, your interests in animals and the crazy things that they do, and by using the lens of animal behavior to look at those, end up exploring more general skills having to do with asking why and how anything works, from an animal to a process inside your cells to a process inside a vehicle to and how do you then, after you've come up with those explanations, test those explanations, how do you then take the data from those tests and analyze them, and then how do you then critique that evidence and then communicate a compelling argument to others? That's fundamentally what animal behavior in the larger field of behavioral ecology, which this course introduces you to, is all about. So I think this translates more than it's not just about animals. If you happen to take it because it was just a convenient elective and well, but how am I ever going to use animal behavior? I really think that the tools that we talk about in this class are widely generalizable across science and beyond. So hopefully you see that, and hopefully, just give me a little bit of leeway. And as we talk about these things and try to think about how it might generalize to other phenomena. All right. So how's the course organized? Basically, we separate it into these two groups. So pre-midterm, it's sort of the foundations here. So we're going to talk about the introduction to animal behavior, Timbergen's four things that I was kind of hinted at already, foundations of communication and learning. And then we get into the more, they take all those foundations and apply them to these more advanced cases, which really cover like the four Fs of animal behavior. So foraging, fighting, fleeing, and reproduction. And so those are sort of covered in these kind of areas here, in these units here. So taking the fundamentals, like those four types of explanations we talked about, communication, signaling, all of that, applying them to complex behaviors. That's what we do after the midterm. And then we wrap up with your group projects and the final exam. All right. So the stuff we talk about here, I have to go over so much, it can kind of spread a little bit thin. So it's really the tip of the iceberg. So there's a bunch more that if you're interested in this stuff, that you could then further pursue after this class. Here at ASU, here are some good courses that are follow-ups to this. So this 435 is basically a lab component where if you you hear about me describing an experiment, like they did this crazy thing to an ant or to a bee or they to a mouse or so on, in order to try to understand that, you think, wow, that's a really, I'd really love to learn how to do that. 435 is the lab where you get to do that stuff. So it is an animal behavior lab where you learn all these research methods. You'll go out, you'll do playback experiments out in nature, seeing how birds respond. You'll do stuff in the lab. You come up with your own project. It's really a fun course. 436 is sort of the social extension of this course. And so this course, we're going to talk about behavioral ecology in general. If you want to then take that and understand the behavioral ecology of social systems, that's 436. And then really any organismal biology class is going to strongly link to this course. So things like an invert zoo, entomology, vert zoo, these are all things that, especially when we start thinking about how things evolve, what things are for, what are the mechanisms underlying these things, et cetera. If you have the lens of animal behavior, it will make these much richer. Because you'll look into it and you'll start seeing like, oh, I get like it's interesting that this particular tissue is here because that tissue enables this, like the difference like between fruit bats and micro bats, every other bat is there's a tiny little piece of the ear that you might get pierced that a fruit bat doesn't have. And that has to do totally with the fact that fruit bats don't echolocate. You know, like all of these little things, like once you sort of start thinking about the behavior and how, and a lot goes under behavior, as we'll talk about, then it starts giving a whole new context to understand anatomy and physiology. So, definitely, if you haven't taken these, if you have taken them, think back on them as we go through the course. If you haven't, and you're looking for something that complements this course, I definitely recommend these as well. Okay, textbook I've already mentioned. See Canvas for access options. Breed book, it's pretty good. There are a ton of animal behavior books out there. This is just one that I've picked because the author is sort of a friend of ASU. He's I was actually the advisor of several faculty who are here at ASU, and it's just a, it's I thought it has a decent level of examples for this level of introduction. But there are a bunch of others out there. This one's freely available at the library, so check Canvas for access options. As I go through these units, I've put next to the units what chapters they correspond to out of the book. Again, I'm not sort of going word for word out of the book, but I tried to organize the content here to match the delivery there so that you could use it as a resource. So if you're looking for more insights, more examples, clarifications, then definitely that's how you link to the book. Otherwise, course structure, I've hinted at these things. There's these lectures. So I give you an opportunity to score credit on the lectures through clicker exercises. Now, these clicker exercises, there's a drop policy. So I guess I probably could have just put how many are dropped here, but it's on the syllabus and I don't want to misquote myself, but I think it's like roughly like five are dropped. But check the syllabus and check on Canvas to be sure. But it's only worth, it's worth 10% of your grade, but you get those automatic drops. And these questions are not, and I'm not going to ask any today, these questions are not graded for for correctness, they're more graded for completeness or comprehension. So it's, I might ask one, two, maybe three questions in a lecture, maybe one in the middle, two kind of closer to the end. And if you, and then I'm going to scan through everybody's answers. And if somebody answers with something that's nonsense, like a number or something, that then I might bark that off. But as long as you've got a majority of them with an answer that actually looks like an answer to the question, then you'll get credit for it. So it's a pretty low bar for credit for these things. And again, there's that automatic drop policy. I've got these UCEs, these unit comprehension exercises. These are auto-graded Canvas exercises. These are not meant to be a major burden. So there is a drop policy on those as well. And so every unit, you can see we have like roughly 10 units or something like that. So in every unit, you've got an opportunity to practice for these units. If you don't decide to do one of these exercises, after the due date goes by, it becomes a practice exercise where you'll have access to practice for midterms and so on. There's a applied reading exercise. So this is a perusal-based thing. I really like perusal. So basically what I've done is I've gone through the corresponding chapters in the Breed book, and I've just looked through his references, and I found a paper in each unit that he referenced that I thought was kind of interesting and reinforces an idea. And I put it up on perusal. How many people have used perusal? So a fair amount. For those who haven't, it's a tool that actually ASU is getting rid of like next year, but hopefully they have something to replace it. But it's a tool that allows you to post PDFs and other media, and then you go in and you get points for reading it, you get points for scrolling through it, you get points for deleting comments. You get the most points for leaving comments that a little AI grader thinks are rich comments that other people have responded to, and that you've responded to other comments. And so it's meant to encourage interaction. So you get a, you know, you, so it's like every perusal assignment's 3 points. But if you just read it and left a couple comments, you get like 2 out of those 3 points. But if you leave a couple of really strong comments that other people responded to, or if you respond to other people's comments, then you're likely to get that third point. And so that's how perusal works. So I've picked, these texts that these are real research studies that Breed references and put them on perusal, and I've seeded them with some discussion. So I'll also, as you guys are reading it, go back through, and so will the TAs, this sort of, if people ask interesting questions, or if we see something else that we want to add, then we might add another comment. You can respond to those comments, or, you can pose new questions and so on. And it's just a nice way to sort of get an idea of where some of these broad ideas come from. Then after the reading exercise here, then there's these, this con bio behavior pitch project. And so this is a group project that after the midterm, you'll start worrying about, and it's broken up. This 30% is broken up into these little subparts. So actually what you end up submitting ends up not being as much of a weight as it seems. So in a course about this size, I'm going to ask that after the midterm, people form groups of about four. And so due to numbers, that means we might end up having to have one or two, three person groups, but and that'll be a by my approval so that not everybody is in that. So we want to make sure that these groups are most of the time are going to be four person. So you'll get points for forming your group right after the midterm, and then you're going to pick an organism. So the idea here again is going to try to pitch. You're not going to do the experiment, but you're going to say based on some interesting feature that happened in the kind of greater Phoenix metro area, then you've noticed that there is sort of a juxtaposition of an intermingling of animals and human infrastructure or humans, gesundheit, that may involve alterations in animal behavior in some potentially interesting or significant way. May or may not, but at least you look at it and there's the potential for it there. So you would say, what if I'm going to write a proposal that someone I'm going to try to get to fund me to study this? That's what your pitch project is going to be, is a presentation where you're going to pitch basically why you think there might be an issue there, what you think the fundamental questions are, what hypotheses you would like to test, and what the design of your experiment would be if you were funded to actually go and do that experiment. And so that's what you'll actually be doing there, is just the pitch of, trying to get someone interested to do that. So you'll have an organism selection where you're going to say, I'm going to study this bat or this, I'm really interested in. It has to be something not at the zoo. So it's got to be something that you find, a wild animal that's out there, or at least, it, like, you could study, I'm okay with studying some aspect of rock doves, even though they're everywhere. Grackles, all those things are fine. Something that you potentially could go out and observe. I'm not going to ask you to do the experiment again, but it'll probably be good to go out and, and find something. So you'll choose that organism and justify why you selected it. And then at the end of the semester, then you'll put together a video presentation giving your pitch. And then after you upload that video presentation, you'll do a peer evaluation using Canvas to facilitate that. So you're not going to present in front of the class. You're going to upload these to Canvas and then do the peer reviews in Canvas. So we don't have to sit through a ton of these peer reviews and take, three or four classes to do that. But you'll still have an opportunity for your classmates, for several of your classmates to see yours. So if everybody has four-person groups, we'll get about four reviews per report. So you'll get a score individually for your contribution to the peer evaluation process. So we'll talk more about that as we get closer to the midterm and after the midterm, but just know that's coming. That's a part of your grade. Then the tests. I mentioned these are two-stage exams. So how many people have taken a two-stage exam? Very few, okay, but a couple. A lot of times people have taken them like in high school. So not a lot of faculty do them, but I learned about them through some other units. And ever since I've been using them, I've really enjoyed using them. And I think the students have given very positive feedback. The idea here is that, we only have the midterm and the final. So on the midterm, and the final is going to be very similar, there'll be a Tuesday that week. And that Tuesday, I or one of the TAs will be here that Tuesday. You don't have to be. It's a Canvas-based exam, but you can come into that Tuesday and you can take it here, or anytime that day, you can take it. Once you start it, you'll get 90 minutes to finish it. And then, so it's a timed exam. You don't get your scores. You don't get the answers afterwards. So again, you can take them here, but if you want to take them at home, anytime that day, you can take it. It's fine. Then after that closes, then on Thursday of that week, then again, somebody will be here. You can come to class that Thursday, but you don't have to. But all day that day, then it's a collaborative exam. So whereas stage one will be, that was the Tuesday one, that has lockdown. So you'll have to, you get a single sheet, like a cheat sheet, and maybe some scrap paper, and you do it in front of lockdown, and that's your stage one, that's your individual. But for the collaborative one, there's no lockdown. It's the exact same test, but you now can collaborate with anybody or as many people as you'd like from the current class. So you can come here to class on that Thursday and work together as a group out loud, or you can do it on Slack or on Discord, or you could come here and some people over here working alone, some people over here working in group. You don't have to work in a group, but it's the exact same test, and you're going to get scored on both versions, and you'll 80% of your midterm score will be your individual score, and the other 20% will be your group score. So it's not a makeup exam. It's like an opportunity to, now that you've seen things, to then learn with your peers or reflect upon things with your peers to really sort of to bring up your comprehension of some of those difficult topics and then get some additional points there in this 20%. So that's how that works. We're going to do that for the final exam as well. So in the final, the last Thursday of fin the last Thursday of regulation class will be stage one, and then the finals week day, that will be stage two. But again, this will be one of the things where it's on Canvas, and if you don't want to come to class for it, it'll just be available all day. So there'll be some flexibility in when you take it. So that's how that's set up. Any questions about that? Okay. All right. Otherwise, late policy. So most assignments have this no penalty grace period. So Almost all assignments except for the group assignments. So the assignments having to do with the project, particularly the video upload, because I have to get peer review set up, those really have to come in right on time. And then the midterm stages and the final stages. But everything else, like the ICEs, the AREs, I've set it up so that they're due on a particular day at 11:59. But if you turn them in any time between that time and 10 a.m. the next day, Canvas might mark it as late, but there won't be any late penalty. So it's, try to get it in by the due date, but if you're a few minutes or a few hours late, that's fine. As long as it's in before the morning, you're okay. So that's what I mean by this kind of grace period here. But again, group projects have to be turned in on time. Try to put a lot of flexibility in the assignments as I could, but if you do have a medical excuse, that's fine. That can happen. Let me know as soon as you can. If you have religious observance that gets in the way of you completing it, something, let me know like this week, because you should know about those ahead of time. If the medical absence prevents you from letting me know ahead of time, I totally understand, but let me know as soon as you're healthy, as soon as you're well. Otherwise, grade correction policies. It's a big enough class that it's really hard to do a bunch of corrections at the end. So once a grade gets back to you, you've got 1 week to notice if you think there's anything wrong with the grade, then let me or let someone know about that, and then we can take a look at it. But after that week, then we have to sort of say, well, that grade's kind of committed after that week. Otherwise, copyright stuff. So I've tried to distribute, all the lectures, they're all online. Whenever technically possible, I will technologically possible, I'll post, the lectures within a few hours, usually, definitely within 24 hours of the time. So the videos will be up there and audio will be up there. So I try to give you all the materials that I can, but keep that in the class. Those are all copyright me. Your own notes are copyright you. So theoretically, you could sell them, but that's against ASU academic policy. So it's academic misconduct. So even there, just keep it within the class. So don't share stuff online. Don't sell your notes. Don't post assignments or any stuff that I give to you. Unapproved collaboration. So almost all of the assignments are individual assignments. So that means that when you take your comprehension exercise, when you do the midterm, those sorts of things, it's supposed to reflect your individual understanding. And so it's totally okay to say, to study and say, oh, I didn't quite understand the difference between a signal and a cue. Can you guys like have some, in a study group, talking about that. But if there's a question on a comprehension exercise, a Canvas comprehension exercise, you shouldn't be doing those together. Like you shouldn't be looking over each other's shoulders and things like that. That's supposed to reflect, it's supposed to give me a snapshot into what you alone understand. So that's what I mean by unapproved collaboration. We want you to collaborate in the stage twos. We want you to collaborate in the group project. We want you to work with each other to help understand the general topics, but otherwise the other deliverables you give to me, then those are reflect your individual effort. Otherwise, so throughout the class, not so much, this is going to be samples here. I will, throughout lectures, have slides that look like this. So question slide. That's my, I'll ask for questions other times, but definitely here, that's way of my reminder to me to pause and ask for questions. I try to put, I think I might need to update this to make sure it's updated for this semester, but I also try to put a link down here to a site where if you'd like to post an anonymous question, if I'm paying attention during the class, or if one of the TAs is, then if they see an anonymous question come up, then they can bring that up. Otherwise, I will review these after class and post responses there. So if there's a question that you really are worried about forgetting, but you don't want to raise your hand, then that's an opportunity to submit that here. Otherwise, the clicker questions, which I'm not asking any clicker questions today, but try to get your clicker set up by next week. Are gonna, there'll be a slide that looks a little bit like this one, have, QR code like that. And, I'll ask probably two or three of them a lecture, usually kind of like one in the middle, maybe one at the end. And then the idea there is again, not correctness, but it needs to be coherent. So if I ask a question about how many, then, maybe you get a number. If I ask what is the name of, then I'm looking for names, And so I know you're all not always going to get those right, but as long as I look through and all the answers you've got, you go, the majority of your answers make sense, then you'll get the credit for that. Again, there's a drop policy on these attendance exercises. They're not meant to be a burden. They're just meant to give you a little extra motivation to come to class and to reward you for coming to class. And otherwise, check the syllabus and what else to do now. Register with iClicker if you haven't already, and then connect to the class. There's instructions for that in the announcements. Complete all of the Unit Zero syllabus activities that will unlock the rest of the course. And then, if you've got the textbook, it's a good idea to start reading ahead and consider doing that first reading exercise. All of the assignments are posted. You could do them all right now if you wanted. I mean, all of the major assignments. But you can of course wait closer to due dates as well. Any question? All right. In that case, I'll let you to retreat to somewhere with better air conditioning.